John Hoshite now with you, and joining me is John Smoltz. Yes, the John Smoltz, Hall of Fame pitcher for the Atlanta Braves, and kind enough to join us here today. And John, thank you for taking the time. And you have a relationship with our new owner, W.J. Albertson, and we were able to hook this up, and I'm sure glad you could join us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime I can talk to somebody who's been in the business for 45 years, it's a pretty good thing.
Well, thank you very much. Interesting, in today's world, you were drafted by the Detroit Tigers in the 22nd round of the 1985 draft. A couple of years ago, Major League Baseball went to the constriction where they cut down the number of minor league teams, and each team can only have 182 players under contract. How could you have maybe accomplished your Hall of Fame career under those restrictions? Because as a 22nd round pick, you would have had to find another avenue to the major leagues, probably.
Yeah, a lot has changed over the time frame of me being drafted and where the game is today. You know, I think baseball and sports is always about adjustments and what do you need to do to accomplish your goals and dreams. I'll be honest, I was a little bit had a chip on my shoulder when I got drafted that late. I was supposed to go high in the rounds, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And I signed really early to go to Michigan State, which may have hurt my draft selection, because back when we were doing signing a draft pick was very important. The allocation of money was not the same that it exists today. So those kind of things, really, college was worth a lot more than any signing bonus unless you were in the first or third round. So I think about the timing I played. I think about the timing of everything that happened to me was all in a place where it allowed me to thrive and do the things I always dreamt about doing.
Well, in your career, you won 213 games as a starter, and then the interesting part is that you also saved 154 games. So you had to make an adjustment in your career, and because of the combination of wins plus saves, that helped propel you into the Hall of Fame. Talk about that part in your career where all of a sudden now you had to go to the bullpen due to some arm problems.
Yeah, the career and everything about my career was all geared towards winning championships, team-oriented. I want to be the best version of myself, the best teammate I could be. And after 14 years of being a starter, you know, I developed many arm injuries along the way, and I knew I was headed for Tommy John. Once Tommy John surgery came about, I was dedicated and determined to get back to starting, and I did at a relatively quick pace. But then I developed some tendonitis and arm injuries, and I made a decision to go down to the minor leagues after waiting about another 2 months to try to help the ball club in that year out of the pen. And I did that. That was the year of 9/11, and I became the closer the last month in September, saved 10 out of 11 games, and thought I'd turn right back to starting. But management had other ideas, and they wanted me to be the closer, which is not really my desire. I guess I became my own undoing by the success I had in September. But wanting to stay there and giving it a chance to see if it would make us a better team, I decided to stay with Atlanta, signed a 3-year contract to be the closer, and the rest was history. I guess to return back to starting 3.5 years of closing. And yeah, a lot of those things led to a unique and very interesting career, but one that was really, really all birthed out of wanting to win championships. And, you know, we got one, but we should have had more.
Right, that I know. And, of course, the Cy Young Award winner, 24-8, I believe, in 96. So I want to point that out as well. Today's game, as you said, things have certainly changed. Analytics now, that's the buzzword. That's what everybody's talking about. That's what the teams are using. Your thoughts on the modern game right now through the use of analytics?
Well, I've always said that whenever there's a scenario that's playing out in sports. Sports is pretty much a copycat league of things that are going on that teams view as the direction they want to go. And analytics became this new toy and newfound place in sports. And the reality of it is that there's a lot of good in it, but there's also a lot of bad in it. And the bad part is when that's all you're looking at is analytics, and you lose the aspect of the team fundamentals, the ability to be an athlete. We cannot program athletes, and you cannot automatic every single thing there is. And that's really the difference between the teams that win and the teams that don't. I'm not suggesting that just using your eyes is the only answer, but a combination of both with the analytics and the ability to use your eyes and know the game and the people who have played this game for hundreds of, you know, over 100 years, all of a sudden in the last 10, it's been drastically different. And here's what I would say. I mean, people are going to position me in places that are just absolutely not true. But as a former player and now a broadcaster, I've watched the game almost as long as I've played it. And to see the game move in the direction it did, you knew rule changes were going to have to come to get people out of that philosophical place that really got the game stagnated, slow, unathletic. And a lot of that was driven by analytics. So I think teams are going to continue to choose the path that they want to go down. And look, the bottom line is, I would love to see these athletes flourish. The one thing that was said when analytics came in the game was, we're going to put players in the best position to be successful, and we're going to keep them healthier. Well, we know the latter part has not worked. So it's open for debate. There's going to be situations down the road that may cause more rule changes. And baseball's evolving and thriving now again because of those last rule changes that were made.
To the point you made, as far as pitchers are concerned, of course, your expertise, the maximum effort for as long as you can go and then turn it over to the bullpen, it's certainly not how it was when you and Glavine and Maddux were throwing. That's certainly been a change. And what are your thoughts on that maximum effort for as long as you can go thought?
Well, again, this kind of philosophy is all birthed out of analytics, and it's birthed out of a philosophy that says we can do this cheaper and we can use more components to compete with the big boys who have a financial resource and that we just don't have. So it was birthed out of small market teams, and it was designed on paper to make a lot of sense, and it does, until you realize it's an impossibility to sustain. And a lot of these decisions, unfortunately, get made by people who've never played the game and don't understand, but are smart. And so whatever gets the output of a computer, again, looks great, and it's a blueprint for success in their minds until they realize it's impossible to keep these guys healthy with the reward system that they're asking these players and these pitchers to sustain. And so until there's not enough arms in the game, they're going to keep doing this. Until there's a rule change or two that come down the pipe, they're going to keep doing this. And they're going to turn their head to act as if injuries are just part of the game and we're doing the next best thing to accommodate the factory of arms, the business of youth baseball, all this crazy insanity that is asking these players to do the same thing over and over again but expect health is insane. And so scientifically, it makes no sense. The doctors have been talking about this for a long time. A lot of former pitchers have been talking about this for a long time. And we've never had the greater arms in our game than we have today. But we've also never had more injuries and more Tommy Johns than we've had today.
When I watch a ball game, I watch a lot of Cardinal games. We're an affiliate. You see the catcher set up certain places, high, low, in, out, that type of thing. And then you see the pitcher make the pitch, and he may want to pitch down and in, and it's up and away. And when you talk about control, not just walking, but pitch location. And one person I've always liked his philosophy, and correct me if I'm wrong, but your pitching coach, Leo Mazzone, really stressed fastball command, if I'm not mistaken. And that's the thing I see sometimes lacking right now, is pitchers aren't able to throw their fastball where they want it when they need to.
Well, yeah, and that's the reward system that they are being paid under. It's not being paid to command the baseball. It's being paid to max effort, spin it, and keep people from barreling up the ball. So if you're teaching a system that has what I call red line pitching, that's like taking your car and going in your car and the tachometer and revving up your engine into the red line everywhere you go. Well, we all know how long that engine's going to last if you keep doing that. And that's really the bottom line of pitching, the taking away the fundamentals and the longevity for the reward system of spin rate, exit velocity, you know, velocity off and out of the pitcher's hand. So all these things are what pitchers and players have to chase, and I don't blame them, but there's no purposeful data that shows that this is sustainable. And it goes back to the financial model that they have figured out, that if they use 30 to 30, 40 pitchers a year, that is going to be cheaper than paying somebody who can do their job and sustain all those innings. And that's the difference in the game today.
With the rule changes about, throwing to first base, the little extra wide bases, I'm not sure how much a big deal that is, but we're seeing more base stealing coming to add excitement to the game. Do you ever see a day when a team like the Whitey Herzog Cardinals of the 80s could flourish? Or is it too hard to make contact and put a lot of base hits together?
Yeah, see, that's where the argument falls on deaf ears when it comes to analytics. They have convinced themselves and baseball that, you know, the Herzog Cardinals could never successfully play in today's era. I totally disagree with it. And see, if you get on base with a walk, I know they all want home runs. They want to put a point on a board as quickly as possible. But the rule changes now allow rosters who don't have a salary of north of $200 million to compete with the big boys by making pressure on the bases. So if you do get on the base, the pitchers don't know and can't have the ability to hold runners on because there's been no reason to, because their stolen bases are an analytical no-no unless you have a 90% success rate. So the rule changes have enhanced clubs to be able to be athletic again and use that pressure on the bases, even if they don't have home run hitters. 100% the Cardinals would be one of the best teams in baseball today. And I know that's a tough argument when you start talking about eras, but they wouldn't be swinging at the high fastball. They wouldn't be swinging for the fences. They would be getting on base and causing nightmares for some of the greatest pitchers in the game today. Again, when you're training to do something where the byproduct has no stress and there's no reality of stealing a base or pressure on a pitcher, you can take your time and deliver the ball to the plate. Now, not so much. And the Diamondbacks and the Reds and the teams that are becoming very aggressive on the bases are showing ways to win. Not a blueprint for guaranteeing it, but they're showing different ways to win. And that's what baseball's always been about. There are a couple different ways to win and create pressure on the other team to be successful.
And as far as umpiring is concerned, you know, they're doing some umpiring at the minor league level with the whatever you call machine, that type of thing. Do you feel umpiring right now is strong behind the home plate, or do you see there is going to be a need for that type of innovation or calling balls and strikes?
Yeah, I feel bad for umpires today. For the main part of the technology and the viewing and all the camera angles, we have things that we never used to have. So seeing a ball cross that strike zone or cross that box to the viewer seems very easy to call a ball and strike, and it's not. The velocity and spin that they're seeing today is far better than wherever 20 years ago. The automated strike zone is not a great recipe for success down the road. If they go to a challenge system, maybe that's acceptable. But the guys that are trying to hit this kind of velocity today, if we go to the automatic strike zone, hitting is already really bad league-wide. It would be impossible to hit. The top of the zone would be where every pitcher is trying to go with 98 miles an hour and then spin a breaking ball off of that. if they ever went to the automatic strike zone, they have to lower the height of the strike zone. They have to give hitters a chance to hit velocity down versus up. And that would be my biggest concern if they ever gone down there. They got a challenge system in the minor leagues, and certainly in the minor leagues, it's showing to be somewhat successful.
Speaking of velocity, the Cardinals' Ryan Helsley throws 100 miles an hour. He's also now developed a pretty good slider, but I am continually amazed at how hitters, for him at least, you'd think he'd have more swings and misses than he gets, but hitters are able to square him up. And as someone who has batted against people throwing 93, 94 miles an hour, that's back when radar guns first started, I don't think people realize how hard it is to hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and I'm amazed at how hitters sometimes can square that thing up.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I've been watching him a lot, and although he's got an incredible streak going, he does give a lot of hittable pitches in the zone, and a lot of it's with his sliders, but he'll get a ton of swing and misses with the slider. Again, going back to the analytical theory and reward system, closers would rather throw 30 pitches in one inning and get three strikeouts, two walks, and get the job done than actually get the save with three outs and nine pitches. It is very difficult to hit 100 miles an hour. But when you speed up the bat of a hitter with a slider in the zone that's going vertical drop, it's going from top to bottom, he doesn't really go east to west with it. I think there's a fine line between trying to get three strikeouts and creating stress in innings there's no need to have stress. When I was closing, and I've seen people in the past, you know, my biggest thing was, how can I get three outs in the least amount of pitches so that I can be used more during the weeks? And now we have restrictions internally, not scientifically, on closers pitching three times in a row. You know, we can't use guys based on the data that is existing and the velocity they're throwing. So pitching five out of 6 days were not a problem back then because I was commanding the baseball trying to get outs. I think there was a stretch that I had three straight games, 21 straight strikes, closing and got saves without having to strike out the side. So he's dynamic and he's a weapon, and there's a reason he's had success. So I think the biggest thing that the game today is rewarding is more individual stats than actual team stats. And if they would change their philosophy, the game would be better before the health of the players and the actual winning of teams. When you think about the success rate of a hitter today is go 1-for-4 with a home run and three strikeouts. That's an analytical kind of dream other than going 4-for-4. And the same thing with a pitcher. He doesn't have to pitch many innings, but if he has a, you know, 2-strikeout-per-inning success rate, boy, they're gonna love that. And he could have a 5 ERA, but if he keeps missing bats, and that's, again, the analytical kind of the way that they look at it.
And finally, John, I really appreciate your time this morning. Who are the top teams? We're getting near the all-star, or not all-star break, but halfway point of the season, I think. And who do you feel the top teams are right now that really have a legitimate shot of winning it all, and why do you feel that way?
Well, the Dodgers were built and put together in the offseason for multiple championships. So they've sustained, unfortunately for them, some pretty crucial injuries. They're still a very, very good team, along with the Phillies and the Braves in the National League. Milwaukee and the Guardians are two teams that nobody saw coming and just keep winning. So don't discount them, even though they're going to have a hard time at the trade deadline doing a lot of things based on the Brewers, at least, based on their philosophical, the way they do things. And I think in the American League, Baltimore was the most complete team for me in the American League, but they've sustained three major injuries in their rotation. So they're going to see what they do at the trade deadline, if anything. The Yankees have kind of come back to earth a little bit. And then the Seattle Mariners are the one team that is so interesting with their starting pitching, and their pitching staff is so good. If they score any runs, they're a dangerous team. But then you've got teams like the Pittsburgh Pirates, who could spoil. There's a nightmare if they get in the postseason. based on their young pitching. Don't know if their young pitching is going to be given a chance to go throughout the year, but for the most part, in this baseball season, we have some top-heavy teams, and then we have a lot of teams kind of all filling in the same boat, around 500, and that'll be an interesting scenario playing out when they get to the wild card. So all in all, it's top-heavy three teams in American League, top-heavy three teams in National League, and a lot of this is going to really be determined on who's able to make the biggest splash in trades, because there's not a lot out there to be had, but somebody's going to find it desperate enough to make that move.
And I'm sorry, one final question, if you'll indulge me. I also need your objective view about this year's St. Louis Cardinals team.
You know, the Cardinals, I got to give them a lot of credit. They were dead in the water about a month ago, and a lot of teams scratched their head. And you know, in baseball, because it's such a long season, the glass half full, the glass half empty argument comes around about five times a year. You know, you think about it, coming out of spring training, the glass is half full. Then all of a sudden you see them go through what they did, horrible schedule, travel and some of the things they had to endure, and then some injuries, and then the glass is completely half empty. And there is no chance for this team to not only entertain the playoffs, but they're going to look at rebuilding and they're going to have to rehaul. I got to give them credit for sticking together and their management. They said their team never wavered despite the inability to play Cardinal brand of baseball. And now they're playing the kind of baseball that gives them hope to either make deals or make that run to not only win a division, but secure a playoff. So look, they were built offensively and they have a complementary starting staff, but their offense is going to be the reason why they're successful. They throw strikes. They've gone a different direction with their rotation. They don't have a ton of power in there. They rely on their defense and offense to be successful, and their bullpen's been pretty darn good. So the Cardinals have injected life into that team and that city, and they are now looking to be very relevant.
Well, John, once again, I can't thank you enough for the time in my 45-year history. You're definitely one of the top interviews I've been able to do, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us here and give us your thoughts on baseball right now.
My pleasure, and I tell you, enjoy the time that you have, and you put a lot of years into this, and enjoy the time that you get coming up, and it was my pleasure spending some time with you.
Well, I'm going to do something that you like to do. I'm going to get to play a lot more golf now.
Well, that's right up my alley.
All right, very good, sir. Well, thank you once again for joining us here on Sportsline.
My pleasure.
That's John Smoltz, Hall of Fame pitcher and now Fox analyst on baseball, joining us today on Sportsline. I want to thank him.